They will regulate militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Another busy day in the world of the Second Amendment. Whew, man. So Monday, we got the Wolford decision. No, we got Wolford last week. Sorry. Yesterday, Tuesday, we got the word that the Supreme Court is taking a hardware case. Actually, two of them. The case involving Cook County's ban on so-called assault weapons and Connecticut's ban on so-called assault weapons. Then this morning, we learned that the DOJ is filing suit against the Commonwealth of Virginia over its ban on assault firearms and large-capacity magazines. We anticipated, maybe by the time you see this, the DOJ will have also sued California over its Glock ban, which goes into effect today. So there is a lot happening in what is typically a fairly slow time of year for politics, for the courts, for, you know, even news in general. Not for the Second Amendment, not for our right to keep and bear arms. Talking about it with us on the program today, Hannah Hill from National Association for Gun Rights. Very pleased that she could join us. I was on my way. I was actually in D.C. yesterday, sitting at a red light at noon when the orders list came out, and I went on X and I saw Casas Morris's post about Vera Montes being granted. I did my little happy dance in the car. On my way up to D.C., I was listening to Washington Gun Law's William Kirk and Costas and Hannah when the orders list was supposed to come out about 9:30 in the morning. That's typically when it comes out. And appreciated them keeping me company on my way to D.C. Had a great conversation, by the way, with ATF Director Robert Sakata and Chief Counsel Robert Leiter. You will see that in the coming days. It's going to take me a little bit of time to put that together, but it was a great conversation. I really appreciate them sitting down and speaking to me with great candor about a number of different issues. It was about a 45-minute interview, and I learned a lot. I think you will, too. But I think you'll learn a lot from the conversation with Hannah Hill from National Association for Gun Rights as well. Take a look and listen. Hannah, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Cam. How you doing?
I am good. It is just a week full of breaking news and good news for gun owners. Right before you and I started talking here, Harmy Dillon, the head of the DOJ Civil Rights Division, announcing a pair of lawsuits on separate coasts, right, going after California's Glock ban, which she had hinted at even as recently as yesterday, telling Attorney General Rob Bonta, we'll see you in court. And she had also hinted that action was coming against Virginia's gun ban, which is now in effect, and that, too. Now subject to federal litigation, which is interesting because we do have the Supreme Court agreeing to take a hardware case, right? So this Virginia lawsuit, as well as the existing lawsuits that are going on in federal court and state court, these cases, I mean, cases all around the country are going to be implicated by what happens with the Supreme Court's decision. Should come down about a year from now in Vera Montes, Grant versus Higgins. How excited are you? How big a deal do you think this is, Hannah?
I, on a scale of 1 to 10, I am 11. That's how excited I am. And it is a huge deal. This is something that we've been working for the whole time I've been working on the Second Amendment litigation side, and others have been working on it for far longer. The assault weapons ban issue is probably, we felt that that was the lowest hanging fruit after Bruin. And it's kind of a shock that, what is it, 4 years later, we are only just now seeing the Supreme Court finally agree to, you know what, we're going to step in and we're going to settle this issue. We thought it was going to be probably a GVR. A grant vacate and remand for the five cases that were sitting there, and that they would probably maybe take it next year, next term in the fall. So, and they would have been within the range of Kavanaugh's prediction. And they've certainly got the vehicles coming up through the Third and the Seventh Circuit. The fact that they went ahead and did it, that was felt like a real concession on their part, finally admitting, you know what, We see that it doesn't really matter what we say about the Bruin standard, the Second Amendment analysis. It doesn't matter what kind of clarification we give for how you're supposed to apply that, as they did in the Wolford decision. It doesn't matter to the lower courts. They are not going to do the right thing on the gun ban issue until we point blank force it. And that felt like the real message of the fact that they went ahead and said, okay, we're going to grant cert. They could have waited for a circuit split. We've thought that was that was the only thing that made sense for why they were waiting so long.
Yeah. 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 In fact, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, the court really upended the conventional wisdom. Well, there's Second Amendment cases, right? We've been told the Supreme Court really doesn't want to intervene in interlocutory appeals. Well, they took Wolford versus Lopez. That was an appeal of an injunction, right? So that had not been fully briefed and tried on the merits. So that was, you know, one kind of example of conventional wisdom being blown up. Then we've been told, yeah, they really want to see that circuit court split develop. As of right now, we expected there'll be a circuit court split with the Third Circuit decision, but as of right now, there's not. And yet they're taking the case anyway. And then with the five cases based on lawsuits challenging, you know, carry bans for 18 to 20 year olds, sale bans for 18 to 20 year olds, there is a circuit court split that exists right now. And the Supreme Court denied cert in all of those cases. They didn't GVR them. They just denied them outright, which was, to me, that was the one disappointing thing that we've seen this week from the court.
There is a bit of good news, though.
Okay.
One of those cases came up through the Third Circuit. That was a good decision. That's been left standing.
Yeah.
That was out of Pennsylvania's ban. So that is a bit of good precedent on the 18 to 20 firearms rights issue that will be useful for those three states and useful for other cases that are coming up the pike challenging that issue. I think people should keep going. Part of the issue, honestly, and trying to read the tea leaves here, I think we can say this. I think the gun rights community can really admit at this point. So one of those cases was the case that Pam Bondi defended as Florida Attorney General.
NRA versus Glass, right?
Yeah. Yep. And so the irony that that case went to the Supreme Court while she was head of the Department of Justice could not have been unrelated to the fact that the DOJ was signaling to the Supreme Court, we don't really want you to take this issue. Well, I mean, she's not there anymore. Florida has an attorney general who's shown the country what a pro-gun attorney general actually looks like. Mm-hmm. Not defending unconstitutional laws should be at the top of that list. So the Supreme Court, we do know also that Justice Roberts tends to like put us on a, it likes to ration out the controversy. And oddly enough, when I saw that the Supreme Court upheld birthright citizenship, I became much more hopeful that they were actually going to take the gun ban issue for that reason.
Interesting. So that's, you thought, okay, well, now that they've gotten that controversial decision out of the way, here's another one that we'll pull up and decide next term.
Yes. Yes.
Huh. Interesting. I hadn't really considered that. And, you know, and I said before I brought you on here, I've seen on X and on social media, you know, there's a contingent of gun owners. God bless them. They always see the rain cloud, you know, and it's always right over there. Even if it's a perfectly sunny day for the rest of us, it's always raining on them. And so I've seen, don't get your hopes up. You know, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Barrett, they're going to vote against us. It's going to be a 5-4 decision upholding the ban. I think we, you know, we should keep ourselves open to the possibility that that this case does not go our way. But as I said before I brought you on here, I mean, I just think if the Supreme Court sticks to its jurisprudence and to what it is Second Amendment cases, there's no other decision that they could reach other than that these bans violate our right to keep and bear arms.
That's right. Well, let's just be super realistic about this thing. Kagan has already admitted that AR-15s are in common use, that they are America's rifle. She said that in Smith & Wesson versus Mexico. She is probably the leader of the leftists on the court. And if she has said that, do we really think realistically that Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett are going to be to the left of her on that? I don't think so. You know, it's just absolutely unrealistic for people to think that we should be worried about what they're going to rule. I mean, we know what their Second Amendment jurisprudence looks like. We know if it's Justice Roberts writing the opinion, we're going to get it watered down. If it's Amy Coney Barrett writing the opinion, we're going to get a very cool-headed analytical application of the actual Bruin standard. Now, we might nitpick about some of the ways she words things, worried that the lower courts are going to twist that. But if you actually read her Wolford concurrence. I came away very impressed. And people also forget that Amy Coney Barrett is the only Supreme Court justice that I'm aware of to have actually addressed the nonviolent felon issue. That's an issue that the court has been very, very leery of. They have shown zero interest in actually addressing the fact that nonviolent felons should not lose their gun rights for life, not under the Bruin standard, not under the actual history and tradition of the Second Amendment. Amy Coney Barrett did. She did it before Bruin while she was on the Seventh Circuit. A fantastic text, history, and tradition analysis proving that nonviolent felons should retain their firearms rights under the Second Amendment. The gun rights community likes to forget that. And I think Amy Coney Barrett gets a bit of a unfairly bad rap from them on this issue for some reason. I'm not saying she's perfect on every issue. I do wish she had come out the other way on some of the rulings we've gotten over the last few days. But, you know, you got to look at what she said every time she's put pen to paper. There's a lot of reason to be hopeful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And I again, I mean, I think this kind of goes strays outside of the Second Amendment issue, but I understand the frustration and the anger over the birthright citizenship decision. But, you know, my friend Kurt Schlichter, who's also an attorney, has been prepping people for this. And he has said, you might not like the decision. There is an entirely defensible argument that, you know, the Supreme Court can make. And I think it is a defensible argument. If you want to change the Constitution or if you want to go the Kavanaugh route and try to change the law through Congress, that would open the door. But I'm also one who I want to see the Constitution mean something. Even if I don't necessarily like the outcome of a decision, I would rather the courts say, hey, the Constitution doesn't allow this, rather than pretend that the Constitution or assume that the Constitution does allow for the expansion of government power at the expense of individual rights. That's just my philosophy. So,
well, I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I think, honestly, this is a really hard concept for us to factor into our analysis of these things. But there's a level of humility that we all have to retain. Think about it like this. We all know that we're probably wrong somewhere. Nobody's right 100% of the time. But I don't know where I'm wrong, or I would change my views on that, right? And that goes for all of us. If the Supreme Court did what we wanted it to do 100% of the time, what are the chances are that we would be heading for a state of imbalance on something? The fact is, when you have a court that doesn't agree with you 100% of the time, chances are likely that you may be the one, first off, you may be the one wrong. Second, the institutions themselves matter. And I guess that's really what I'm trying to get at. The institutions themselves are not political, but they preserve the political process of government by the consent of the governed, which is the definition of freedom, right? With the Bill of Rights, again, the Bill of Rights is there to say these areas you may not do. And obviously they don't execute that properly all the time, as we've talked about. But the point is, the institutions matter. And when there are sometimes protecting the institution actually means we get a short-term political loss, it's still worth it to liberty long-term, especially because, as you noted, the founders left plenty of tools at our disposal to actually address this. Let's start with the low bar. Look, you're worried about birthright citizenship, maybe secure the borders.
Right.
I mean, that's going to go a long way. Then you can reform your immigration system. And that's a conversation our country's overdue for. And then only then do you get to the actual statute. Yes, Congress can do it. And then, of course, you can change the Constitution itself. I personally don't love that approach. When you open Pandora's box, I don't know what else is going to be on the table. So, but I don't think we have to do that to address this issue. There are plenty of other tools at our disposal. What people don't like to talk about is the fact that it requires mobilization and confrontation and basically getting up off your couch and doing something about it. It doesn't let you be the armchair warrior on Twitter. And a lot of us would love the excuse to do that. And I'm sorry, that's not what the founders gave us in the Constitution.
Yeah, no, I think it's an excellent point. And, you know, I would just and I would caution people as well. I mean, you look at what happened in, you know, not just the New York City elections, but even last night in Colorado, you know, on the left is not learning the lesson of, hey, we need to moderate our views. We need to appeal to middle America. The left is Democrat Party is being hijacked by Democrats who are intent on remaking that party.
Sure.
And listen, they are organized. They are active. They're not on the couch. Right. So if the people who pose an existential threat to your political ideology are organized and are getting out there, they're active, then, yeah, you better heed that wake up.
That's right.
That's right. So I think you're right about that. You know, I want to ask you something else, Hannah. I mean, this was, you know, again, the importance of the Supreme Court taking these hardware cases. I don't think it'd be overstated. And hopefully a year from now, we get a resolution on one of the burning questions of really, you know, the last since 30 years, right? Can you ban these commonly owned firearms? Are you concerned at all looking beyond that opinion that, I mean, there are obviously going to be a lot of other issues that are still outstanding, but are you concerned that the Second Amendment community is going to say, all right, I can sit back on the couch now. We've got the right to carry. We've got the, you know, AR-15s enshrined into the Constitution. I'm good. Are you worried about the Second Amendment activists checking out at all?
I'm always worried about that, but I'm not worried about it so much in response to the Supreme Court. I'm more worried about it. You see that trend much more with the results, with election results, right? We saw it in a really big way when Trump was elected, which was extremely unfortunate. It makes the job a lot harder. There are still threats when there's a Republican in office, especially when that Republican is, God bless him, Donald Trump. You know, his first term, he wasn't great on guns. He's been so much better the second term, but we didn't know that going into it. And the fact that he's been greater on gun rights in his second term means that there's been so many opportunities to capitalize on that. But we can't do that if people, you know, go think everything's fine and go home. We need them in the fight. So that's been something that we've seen. You learn to ride those waves, but it's not always easy. Worried about it with the midterms, depending on what happens. If we get good results in the midterms, that means the job's going to get harder to defend gun rights in the immediate aftermath. I'm less worried about that with the Supreme Court, simply because that is a very, very specific issue. And this is where the cynicism of our community does actually come into play. It works in our favor in this case, because there's plenty of other gun control issues. And everybody knows the lower courts. Everybody also knows the deep blue state legislatures. We right after Bruin, you saw all the Bruin response bills passed by New York and California and Hawaii and all the others. There absolutely are going to be a whole slew of Viramontes response bills that come. I think we may see them looking a little bit like the permit to purchase bills recently passed by Colorado and Washington State, where basically, okay, we're not going to ban it, but we are going to regulate it to the hilt. We are going to require you to jump through so many hoops. And it may not be crazy hoops. It may be small hoops, maybe death by a thousand paper cuts. If I were designing a gun control statute, that's what I would design it to look like. And I'm not telling them anything they don't know. They've learned just as much about how to evade constitutional challenge as we have learned ever since Bruin. It's a mistake to think that the left is not getting better at this too.
And I would add to that too. I mean, I was just looking on Blue Sky this morning at some of the anti-gun law.
You're a brave man.
And you know, you can already see people like Drew Stevenson, who's a law professor in Texas. I think it was Megan Walsh from University of Minnesota, saying, you know, don't just think about the gun owner. Don't just think about the permit to purchase, but think about the gun seller. Right. We can put all kinds of regulations on FFLs, too. Not even disguising the purpose of this isn't to ensure that criminals don't get a hold of guns. It's to ensure that law abiding people don't get a hold of guns. I wouldn't say that part out loud, but, you know, hey, I'm not them. So I think that you're right. There is going to be a response. I mean, we're going to see a response, frankly, to Wolford. You know, you've got people like Ian Ayers and Frederick Vars, or is it the other way around? I can't remember the Ayers and Vars, a couple of law school professors as well, saying that, you know, states like Hawaii could just pass a law that says private property owners that that property is open to the public. They have to say one way or the other whether concealed carry is allowed or prohibited. They have to post signage. Costas has taken a very dim view of that, saying that's a compelled speech, and I would agree with that.
That would be.
Yeah. But this is where their head is at right now, right? I mean, they're not taking the loss. And then, and then moving on, right? They immediately go to, all right, well, how can we subvert the court's opinion and still get what we want? Which, right. To be fair, we would probably be doing that same mental exercise had we lost Wolford, had we lost Hamon, right? We're looking at ways to advance freedom. How can we get around this terrible decision to still advance freedom? But you're right. The fight is definitely going to continue. And I hope that folks will not check out. I do want to ask you, though, what are you going to do the rest of the summer? You're not going to be spending your mornings on Mondays with William Kirk and Costas Morris. You don't have any orders list to wait on.
You know what I'm going to do next, Cam? I'm going on vacation.
Hey, good for you. Good for you.
Long overdue, frankly. That's a good question. So we're going to. The next thing is to start planning for the amicus brief we'll be doing in this case. Most of our other cases are assault weapons ban cases, and they're all going to go on hold now because no court's going to want to move, nor would it make sense to move on an issue when the Supreme Court has already agreed to step in and decide it.
Yeah.
So that opens up some capacity, and now we get to dream, which is fun.
How do you think that's going to impact like states like Virginia, where our ban on assault firearms just took effect today? We've already got two injunctions in place, but they're, know that the NRA has said that their injunction is a statewide comprehensive injunction. The state Senator Bill Stanley, who is the lead attorney in that case, has said the same thing. But, you know, Palmetto State Armory is not shipping to Virginia right now because they have the legal uncertainty. The Virginia Supreme Court had appointed a three-judge panel to decide whether these state-based cases should be consolidated.
Right.
What do you think happens in Virginia where things are, we've got injunctions in place, but nobody really knows how far they go and what exactly is enjoined? Right. I mean, if everything just stays on hold from here on out, it seems like there's going to be a lot of confusion in Virginia over the next year.
Well, it does seem that way, or at least it did before yesterday. The reason all of those cases, most of the litigation went to the state courts, obviously, is because Virginia's in the Fourth Circuit, and Virginia already has precedent upholding gun bans. That's, you know, Bianchi, later Snope, that the Supreme Court, as we all recall, refused to hear last year, turning Snope into a verb, right? Getting relisted, and then denied at the end. We were afraid of that this year. So, but that is the Fourth Circuit precedent that rules in Virginia. So when you have that, it made it difficult to challenge Virginia's assault weapons ban. Now, Snope is as good, Bianchi, it was, I guess that would be the proper name for it. Bianchi is as good as abrogated. And that changes things significantly. So, you know, the DOJ doesn't take advice from me. They don't need advice from me. I learned most of what I know from their Second Amendment chief. But it would seem to me that it would be a huge opportunity to go straight for Barry just filed the lawsuit against the Virginia gun ban. Why not ask for, an immediate preliminary injunction, perhaps even a temporary restraining order. You've got grounds to maintain the status quo of no gun ban now for the duration while the Supreme Court decides. And you know what? The Supreme Court's never been willing to give any sort of a temporary restraining order or injunction on the gun ban issue. But that was before they had actually decided to take the issue and settle it. And that was before when the DOJ wasn't asking for it. When the DOJ asks for stuff, the Supreme Court tends to take that seriously.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of opportunity, and I would watch this case very, very closely.
That is very good news. I like your analysis there, Anna. All right. Well, listen, enjoy your vacation. Thanks for joining us on the program. Happy Independence Day to you a few days early. And look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Thanks for having me, Cam. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, always a pleasure to have you here. Hannah Hill from National Association for Gun Rights with us on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Hannah for joining us on the program. So much breaking news to talk about. And again, it's so nice that the vast majority of it is good news for gun owners. All right, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Gulfport, Mississippi, where WLOX reporting that aggravated assault, arson, burglary, Gulfport murder suspect has lengthy criminal history, according to records. Yeah, a criminal history dating back to at least 2013. 34-year-old John Gaddis III is charged with three felonies right now, one count of first-degree murder, two counts of aggravated assault. And as WLOX reports, not the first time that Gaddis has faced violent felony charges. In this case, he is accused of a deadly shooting that happened at a home just before 9 p.m. Monday, the result, according to authorities, of an ongoing argument between Gaddis and one of the victims over drugs. The dispute sent one of the victims to a hospital by a life flight, another to a local hospital via private vehicle, and Gulfport teenager Nikhil Poole was shot and killed there at the scene. Gaddis found a short time later he was arrested, but as the TV station reports, his history of arrest is more than a decade old. In July of 2013, he was arrested by the Gulfport police on aggravated assault, DUI refusal, reckless driving, suspended or revoked driver's license, no insurance, and expired or switched tags. Arrested multiple times throughout 2014, charged with several misdemeanors, including a DUI first offense, driving with a suspended driver's license, disorderly conduct in October of that year. 2015, he's arrested for a probation violation. And then in March, he was charged with burglary. In August, he pleaded guilty to aggravated assault after allegedly hitting a man with a car, then beating him with a helmet and his fists. He received a 20-year prison sentence 11 years ago, but he only had to serve 6 years behind bars, 5 years on probation. And he didn't even serve the 6 years because, again, you get time off for good behavior. So by 2019, Gaddis is back out on the street, charged with trespass upon enclosed land of another. While he's on probation in 2020, he's indicted for third-degree arson, possession with intent to distribute marijuana, which sent him back to prison for a probation violation, but he didn't stay there long because by 2021, he was out and pleaded guilty to the arson and possession with intent charges in March of that year. Sentenced to 3 years in prison, followed by 3 years of probation. And then his record falls silent for a few years. But in 2025, he was arrested by the Gulfport Police Department last July, charged with three misdemeanors, disturbance of public peace, impeding duties of a police officer, assault by threat. He was arrested again in September of last year, charged with aggravated assault and simple assault by threat. In October of last year, his probation was again revoked because of the new arrest and because he wasn't complying with a judge's order to receive mental health treatment. He was sentenced to 90 days at a technical violation center and was released on February 4th of this year. 5 months later, now Gaddis is charged with murder and is being held on a $2 million bond. You know, if that 20-year sentence had actually been 20 years, a lot of crimes would not have been committed there in the Gulfport, Mississippi area. And it is quite possible that one individual would be alive today. Two others would not be suffering from the wounds that they received, allegedly at the hands of John Gaddis III. Today's Armed Citizen story from Chicago, where a woman was released without charges after a deadly apparent road rage shooting in Humboldt Park. Now, the investigation continues, but it is worth noting that this individual was released without any charges being filed. She was taken into custody on Friday. According to news reports at the time, charges were pending, and instead, she's been released. It is possible that the Chicago PD will present charges to the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and they will proceed with charges. But generally speaking, you would not release somebody if it looked like you were going to turn around and arrest them for charges, right? So I think indications are at this point the woman was acting in self-defense. The shooting happened just after 3:30 on Friday afternoon in the Humboldt Park neighborhood. Witnesses say it stemmed from an alleged road rage argument involving two women. At one point, a male got involved into the fracas. That is when shots were fired. One woman, again, was killed, 27-year-old Shade Ingram. Another was taken into custody. But that individual who's not been named, because she's not been charged with a crime, has been released. So hopefully we'll get more information in the near future. But again, it would appear at this point that police, at least the investigation, leaning towards a justifiable use of force there. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. An anonymous Good Samaritan in Missouri who came to the aid of a teenager after she was involved in a violent rollover crash. This happened not long ago, just a couple of days ago. The 16-year-old in question had only been driving a couple of weeks, and apparently wheels left the road, went on the side of the road. She ends up going off the road. Vehicle rolls over, crashes. The teen's mom, Ashley Smith, said that her daughter's cousin was driving ahead of her in another vehicle, but was unaware of what had happened. He just kept going. And Ashley Smith said, one of the most terrifying moments of her life, a stranger stopped without hesitation. Before first responders arrived, he stayed by her side, comforting her, reassuring her, helping to keep her calm. The Daily Journal Online reports that the gentleman described as being 60 to 70 years old, bald with a white beard, about 5'6", driving a tan Chevy pickup truck while pulling a trailer. He apparently, stayed with her, told her that looked like the crash happened after, again, one of her tires left the roadway. Stayed with her for about 20 minutes before emergency responders reached the vehicle, and even removed his own shirt when towels were not immediately available, held the teen's hand, helped to keep her calm. Said, you know, listen, don't look over here where there was blood and shattered glass. Mom says she was experiencing severe panic attacks at the time. When emergency responders arrived, the man quietly left the scene. He moved his vehicle, which had been left on the roadway, and he ran over to help. The teen's mom says that emergency personnel never had the opportunity to learn his identity. Her daughter survived the crash with burns and cuts and bruises and muscle injuries. No broken bones. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. Teen's mom says, while many people will drive past emergencies, he chose to stop. His kindness made one of the worst days of our lives a little less frightening, and we will never forget that. By the grace of God, our daughter survived the crash. We know how differently this story could have ended, and we're thankful every single day that she is still with us. Police said they just want to shake his hand, give him a hug, thank him for the compassion that he showed to this teenage girl when she needed it most. Teen's mom saying, quote, sometimes heroes don't wear uniforms. They simply stop to help a stranger. We hope our community can help us find ours. Well, I hope they can, too. But it is entirely possible that this gentleman doesn't want or need the accolades. He is just relieved to know that this teen is okay and that he was able to perform that good deed. I hope that they're able to reconnect. I really do. But I, you know, some Good Samaritans don't want that attention. They're just happy to be there in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. And before then, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. New lawsuits from the DOJ, new cases at the Supreme Court, all kinds of stuff. And unfortunately, new gun laws going into effect in states like California and Virginia and Rhode Island today. We got the good, we got the bad, we got the ugly, all covered for you there at BearingArms.com. Enjoy the rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, be brave.